You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. That is Mike. How are you tonight, Mike?
Pretty good. Very excited for a very long awaited, I guess, much anticipated episode of Weird Islanders coming down the pipe. They all are,
yeah,
of course. But yeah, this guy, he's got a pretty special place in Islanders history, especially over the last 30 years. And I feel like he's his tongue-in-cheek mention per 60 is up there with some of the greats.
Sounds about right. I would think so. His name comes up a lot in whenever a trade is made, which I guess is either a good thing or a bad thing if it happened 30 years ago. But our guest tonight also has a very special place in Weird Islanders history, and he is our good friend Cary Haber. Cary, what's going on?
Hey, guys, I appreciate you summoning me out of my cave of anonymity for this to talk about the most quintessential 2000s Islander that could possibly exist.
That is right. That is right. Now, before we get to this player, you were the very first guest on Weird Islanders, the podcast, over 2.5 seasons ago. How did that change your life? You're joking about anonymity, but of course, I know being on Weird Islanders, the podcast, the first ever episode has made you a celebrity in your own time. So how did that change your life, knowing that you started this whole thing?
Well, I'm sure Brian Rolston doesn't like me very much, but outside of that,
yes,
it's been a real journey over the last couple of years. It's been a while. I'm excited.
I feel like most since the Brian Rolston episode, which had quite a bit of animosity, deservedly so. About 95% of these episodes have been jovial and celebrations, right. But for that one as the tone setter, it's kind of funny now to think about because we were just really giving it to Brian Rolston a decade later.
So is the thing you just bring me back for the biggest disappointments in Islanders history?
Oh, no, this guy wasn't a disappointment. His number is close to the rafters in this show.
This is a legendary player, let alone disappointment. Are you kidding? But it's funny because not only were you the first guest in Weird Islanders, the podcast history, you were also the first guest to put dibs on another player before doing his episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast. And that is, in fact, this player. So when Mike says this is a long anticipated episode, he's not kidding. Literally since the beginning, we've been waiting to do this episode. This player comes up a lot, like I said, even all these years later, whenever there's a trade or something like that goes down. And so we've waited long enough. And so, Carrie Haber, will you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
Today's player, forward, number 26, Justin Papineau.
That's right. The time has finally come to discuss Justin Papineau, the legendary trade that brought him to the Islanders, the legendary disappearing act after, you know, what seemed like it might be a pretty good season. We're going to dive into all that. Before we do, reminder that we are on Patreon at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you can get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, and a whole lot more. So don't wait. Get on over to patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety and sign up today. Okay, so try and think back again, 2.5 years ago. This was, you know, we're recording an episode of this brand new podcast about another guy who you have a totally different connection with, and Brian Rolston, who we all very much hated and still do. But at the time, you were like, oh, man, I'd really love to do a Justin Papineau episode. So what was it about Papineau that captured your attention and your imagination, and as well as the rest of the Islanders fan base? Because, again, this is a guy who comes up a lot when people, you know, DM me or reply to me like, oh, when are we getting the Justin Papineau episode? This is it. What is it about this guy that just fires the imagination so much, do you think?
I just love this guy so much. So I just... When you think about the early 2000s Islanders and like all of the expectations coming off of that 01-02 season and all of the way that we've overrated forward prospects especially during that time, Justin Papineau is like the gold standard for all of those players. He's the guy that was brought over in a trade for Chris Osgood, and they did it because, you know, Rick DiPietro was probably like 20 at the time, was definitely ready to be a starter in the NHL, only to not play at all during the playoff series against Ottawa. Like, everything about what happened to bring him to Long Island makes me smile, because it is truly like the most quintessential Mike Milbury with Charles Wong money when there was some like player transaction to ever happen. I just love that he is this guy so much.
I was a huge Chris Osgood fan. So when they made this trade, I just remember Milbury being the one explaining why it was happening, was that like they just didn't think Osgood was gonna re-sign. Mm-hmm. So I was mad about that, but I thought because of that and because of the player that they had given up, Osgood, like, okay, well, if you're trading Chris Osgood, you're obviously getting something special in return. And like Carrie said, this was, and I don't think that this has gone away at all. In fact, you can draw a line between Papineau number 26 and the current number 26, well, at least as we record the current number 26, right? Like and the previous number 26, who we've done an episode on, Justin Mapletoft, I think before he switched to 16, was wearing 26. And like, so you think that this guy, he comes over as the piece for Chris Osgood, and you're like, all right, he's obviously going to be great. This is it. You can put this guy's name in ink on a top six wing, from now until, you know, 2012. And to his credit, he wasn't terrible. He was scored. And I feel like every time he scored, it was a nice goal. And Howie Rose would just be like, that's why they got him, baby. Look at those hands. And his name too, like Papineau, it had like kind of like a little romance in it as well. And so we all projected all this, or at least I did. And it sounds like Carrie projected all of this onto him. And he turned out to be a lot closer to Mike York than Thomas Vanek or Bo Horvat, I would say, which was, I guess, a little disappointing. But in the end, like, what a nice little run he had here.
I mean, a very little run, and I think even Mike York would probably be a little bit out of this guy's reach. we'll get to it in a second, but definitely more in that neighborhood. But let's talk about Papineau first before he came to the Islanders, because he was a name I think I had heard, but I didn't know much about him. And in researching this episode, I found a couple of things that were really interesting. One, he was originally drafted by the LA Kings in 1998 in the second round. I guess he didn't sign with them or wasn't tendered or whatever, because he was went back into the draft in 2000 and was taken there by the Blues in the third round, which is kind of high for a guy getting redrafted. You don't normally see guys going that high, but it's here that he started to kind of make a name for himself. And one of the ways to do that and capture people's attention is to score 5 goals in a game. And Papineau did that, believe it or not, in a preseason game in Worcester back when the Blues farm team was there against the Boston Bruins. Now, it was a preseason game, so we don't know who was actually on that Bruins squad. It might have been mostly Providence Bruins for all we know, but still, 5 goals is 5 goals, and the guy made a real name for himself and all of a sudden became kind of a hot prospect at that time. Now, as Kerry mentioned, the Islanders had Chris Osgood was their goalie at the time, was, you know, not looking to re-sign. The Islanders had Rick DiPietro, obviously, in the wings. They thought he was ready, the story of his career. Oh, we think Rick's ready. Rick was not ready. But in any event, it seemed like, you know, now was Mike Milbury, you know, felt now was the time to jettison Osgood. And so we're going to talk about another trade that happened in this day in a second. But March 11th, 2003, Papineau is traded by the Blues with a second round pick, which turned into Jeremy Colleton, who hopefully will get an episode of this show at some point, for a third round pick, who turned out to be a player named Konstantin Berulin, and goalie Chris Osgood. And when they do the Weird Blues, the podcast, I guarantee Chris Osgood is going to be the first episode. But Kerry, like, what was your take on this trade at the time? Well, first of all, let me back up, because we've done an episode about Chris Osgood that is going to come out before this episode. But like, what was your feelings on Osgood and this trade specifically? Now we're kind of used to, oh, he's not going to re-sign. Oh, it's, you know, part of the cap. But this was pre-cap. So I remember being like, wait, why are we trading Osgood? Why don't you just sign him? Well, didn't really work out that way. And obviously Rick was the number one thing, but like, were you an Osgood fan? Were you kind of excited that Rick was going to get the keys here? Or were you like, what the hell are we doing? Why are we trading the one good goalie that we have?
So I remember being mad. I'm looking at the I'm looking at the standings on March 11th, 2003. Right. And the Islanders were firmly in eighth in the conference, which, as mm-hmm. we know, is where they finished. Mm-hmm. But I also remember being like thinking, and I was younger at the time, but I do remember thinking like, wait, this team is in a playoff spot right now. Why are they trading their number one goalie? Seems like a weird decision. Now, they were pretty much planted in that spot. At this point, they were 3 points behind Boston for seventh and 4 points above the Rangers in ninth. So they were like, and in 2003, that was a lot more, honestly, than it is now. So I in retrospect, I get it more, but I mean, I loved Osgood. To me, he was like the final piece of like this whole Islanders are legitimate, actually, like part of that, you know, that era. So seeing him leave, especially because he wasn't going to re-sign, and that 2003 season was pretty bonkers. Like, there's a lot of turmoil on that team. Lots of cliques, right? Like, there was like the Yashin clique against the Pekka clique, and it was like really dramatic, and ultimately Peter Laviolette lost his job because of it. And or that was the rumor anyway. So I kind of remember being like, wait, what is going on here? I don't necessarily know if it was the wrong decision in retrospect to actually make the trade, but the fact that they didn't really get much. I mean, the funniest part is that like the second most milquetoast forward of that era, Jeremy Colleton, also came in. They didn't really get much of consequence for it, so it's kind of like a whatever at the end of the day. But I do remember being like, this is really weird.
Yeah,
and definitely. And it was also so hard to find any information back then.
Yes.
Like, so it kind of just, when things would happen, they kind of just happened, and you'd found out about it on like the bottom bar of SportsCenter. It would like scroll past, and you'd be like, wait, they traded what? Or you'd turn on Fox Sports and whatever the what was that show they had, like that I keep wanting to say I think you should leave, but it wasn't called that, but it had that kind of
sports show period.
Best damn short sports show period. Right. You'd be watching best damn sports show period and the bottom line would be scrolling by and you'd see Islanders trade, you know, Claude Lapointe to Philadelphia or something like that. You'd be like, what? And you couldn't just like run somewhere to find out more. You had to wait to find out more. Mm. And I feel like when we did find out more, it was weird. Like the tone was weird. From everybody, from Milbury, because Milbury didn't even sound all that enthused about any of the trades he made at this deadline.
He never did.
Yeah. He's like, if you read the article from the New York Times, of all places, about this trade, and the subsequent trades that happened this day, he's talking about Yanni Ninema and Papineau and trading Osgood, and he's like, well, yeah, like Ninema should be okay, and we had to trade Osgood, so I had to do it. And there's like nothing, you know, glowing. The only kind of nice words about Justin Papineau in this whole article are from DiPietro, because he played against Papineau in the minor league. And I just remember being that sense of confusion kind of lingered all season with this team, because there was no there weren't a variety of outlets trying to report out why these trades happened, why Milbury was tinkering so much with this team around the edges, like trading Claude Lapointe, bringing in Randy Robitaille, out goes Isbister, in comes Ninema, this trade. Like it was just such a strange season. And then that, of course, with the coaching change as well, like it felt like something was being hidden from us all season long with this with this season. And Papineau was definitely a part of that.
The thing about all of this was like the Islanders PR machine during this era was unbelievable. Like Spada was out there being like, this guy is the real deal.
Yep.
And we bought it hook, line, and sinker. Like we were like, oh yeah, this guy's the future. 2012, let's go. 10-year plan. Yeah.
PR employees would never lie. Yeah, that they're going to like unveil Papineau Avenue in East Meadow or something, because that's just how good he is. Here's Justin Papineau for the ribbon cuttings at your local Entenmann's. That's how good he is. That's how much we believe in this guy.
This guy who played 11 games for the Blues is their number one prospect, because he had 5 goals in a preseason game against something resembling the Boston Bruins, or, you know, 20 guys in Boston Bruins jerseys. We don't know who they were, but they were definitely wearing the jerseys at the time. But yeah, definitely. This was also the era of DiPietro suffering general body soreness and missing weeks at a time, because he was generally sore in his body. But you did mention the other trade that came about the same day, the Brad Isbister for Yanni Ninema trade. Sadly, neither of these guys is eligible for a Weird Islanders episode. Ninema's kind of close. He played 130 games, which seemed kind of low for me, but Isbister played almost 250 damn games for this team, and it's shocking. And I think probably at least 200 of them he was completely invisible, which is incredibly frustrating at the time, because I really wanted to like him and I thought he was going to be a great player. But yeah, this was like a wave of change coming over this team in one day. And like Carey mentioned, they were in the playoff hunt. Like, this was not a team that was like, you know, the season was over, we're working. They ended up making the playoffs this year. But there was a lot of change, you know, especially when you trade your starting goalie. That's pretty wild. But you know, we were thinking that this guy was gonna be pretty good, and you know, he got called up. Actually, before he even got called up, he goes to Bridgeport, Papineau does, and he scores twice in that first game with the Sound Tigers, and including becoming the first player to ever take and score on a penalty shot for the Sound Tigers, who were only a couple of years old at the time. And I believe we're coming off of a called their one lone Calder Cup finals appearance maybe the year before. So like, again, like, you know, the PR machine was, yes, in full gear, but like, there was a reason to be excited for this guy. Like, it looked like he might actually be the goods, and it seemed like, you know, they might have actually gotten one here, although they did trade a veteran goalie who was, much like you said, for you, a beloved player. I mean, Osgood hit the ground running here. There was never a time when people were like, this guy's a bum. Like, it was like, oh my God, we've got Chris Osgood. And then every single day for the next year and a half, it was like, oh my God, Chris Osgood is still starting for the Islanders. It was pretty crazy. But he did end up getting called up during that heated playoff race. Like I said, they did make the playoffs. That was the year they lost to Ottawa, right? in 2003? Am I wrong, or was that, yep, was that the Ottawa year?
Yeah, that's Ottawa.
That was, yep.
Yeah, and that was his one playoff game. Came in that year, 0 points and 0 goals or anything. But that would be Justin Papineau's lone playoff game. Go figure. But you know, they got wiped out in the playoffs. Hey, it happens. We're back next year. This is going to be Papineau's time to shine. And again, preseason. This guy, was anybody ever better in the preseason than Justin Papineau? This guy, he had 3 goals in 3 preseason games, and he looked like a superstar. I wish I could remember preseason games, because this guy sounds like these would have been worth remembering. But this was the year that Papineau kind of staked his claim. He would end up going on to school, play 69 games, a very nice number for them. 9 goals, 7 assists, 16 points. Let me back up. He would play 64 games with the Islanders, 8 goals, 5 assists, 13 points in 2003, 2004, all with the Islanders. And this was where the bloom started to come off the rose a little bit. Let's see if we can go back and remember, like, so coming into this season, obviously, again, they got wiped out by Ottawa in the playoffs, but like, were you still excited for the Papineau experience? Did you think that this guy was going to really be like, you know, was the PR machine still working on you at that time, Kerry?
I think so. I mean, '03. Actually, I know so, because I have a Bridgeport anecdote during the lockout. Oh. So 2003-04 was a weird season too, because everyone, yes, kind of knew that the lockout was coming, and it was kind of like a new transition year for the Islanders. They changed coaches. DiPietro was the starter that year. Pekka was like supposed to be healthy right after coming back from the ACL injury. So there was like still, yeah, a fair amount of optimism that year, if I remember correctly. But a lot of that year to me is kind of a blur in the sense of like, it was a lot of things that happened that just felt like near misses. Like Jason Weimer, total miss. Was that that? Cliff Ronning came in that year. Like there was a lot happening that year that, yeah, like you could tell they knew that this was probably going to be the last hurrah for these guys because of the impending lockout, but they didn't actually do a whole lot. They brought back Marius Tchaikovsky, which obviously is an incredible thing to do, but there was not a lot else happening with this team. Like it was just kind of floating, and they needed some young guys to step up, and Papineau, you know, ideally would have been one of those guys, but he and Mapletoff, like they never really hit, and that obviously impacted where they ultimately finished in the standings. That was also the year Alexei Yashin missed half the year too, because he got skated over, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
I thought that was the year before.
That's this year, because that was the Cliff Ronning experience.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
And so that, you know, this is kind of a fun sliding doors moment with Weird Islanders, where we're talking, you know, we've done episodes with Ronning, Papineau, and Osgood this season. and Papineau and Ronning, like they were on the ice together quite a bit, like in a weird way. The 38-year-old kind of stopgap, and the younger. I mean, he was older than DiPietro Papineau, so it wasn't like he was blooming prospect. And I think what Kerry said is perfectly put, because it felt like this season, if the lockout wasn't to happen, it almost was a handing. Not the torch moment, but a new core was supposed to kind of emerge from these younger players. Matthias Weinhandel, Papineau, Mapletoff. I mean, even Kavasha and Trent Hunter at the time. Like Kavasha was still pretty young. I think he was like mid-20s. Yeah. Bergenheim was a rookie.
what a rogues gallery this you just mentioned right there.
But those were that was their prospect pool at the time. Right. Like you think we got a bad, we say that a lot on Weird Islanders. Like you think that the Islanders pipeline being ranked 32nd by Scott Wheeler, they would have been ranked behind a bunch of teams in like the extra Liga back then, because this is the handful of young players that we are pinning our hopes to,
right?
And maybe in. It wasn't like Weinhandel was a who was Patrick Stefan or Alexander Daigh kind of bust, a league-wide known bust at all. Nail Yakupov, anybody like that, because it was just Islander fans. But I feel like we kind of put those expectations as a small fan base on him, because we're like, well, you're young, and Sean Bergenheim isn't ready yet, so you're gonna have to be the young guy. You and Rick and Maddie Winehandle are gonna have to be the young guys who are who take over when Pekka and Parrish and Bates kind of all leave or age out. And he just didn't do it, Papineau. He somehow, although I will tell you, looking at the roster from that year, he ends up with 13 points and 8 goals in 64 games, despite shooting 18.2%. Scored 8 goals. He scored 8 goals and almost shot 20%. So I don't think Justin shot enough.
I was going to say, so what does that mean? He took 20 shots all season long? Like, that's basically when I made my maths up, but
his time on ice would make Oliver Wahlstrom blush, man, who's average of 7.42. So him and Justin Mapletoft weren't getting fair shakes from our friend Steve Sterling.
I'm looking at the roster. Do you know who led the team in scoring in the playoffs that year against Tampa?
I know who it is. I know who it is. Ninema.
Yes.
Wow.
And I knew it was. I think we've talked about that before. And I was like, I know it's one of the defensemen. I was going to say Cairns or Ninema, because I remember he scored on just like a floater or early in the series.
Wow. But, jeez. So yeah, so like I said, tidal wave of change, that one trade.
Tidal wave of change.
Yanni Ninema, leading playoff scorer for the Islanders, Yanni Ninema.
They scored 5 goals in that series.
But I mean, at least the Lightning went on to win the cup that year. Like, you know, you kind of be like, what are you going to do?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So, yeah, this roster had a lot of guys like Mike mentioned before, your Winehandles, your Bergenheims, these types of players who, like, we were hoping could pull something together and were going to be something. But in most cases, they simply would not become anything like what we kind of expected. And in Papineau's case, he went 20 games into the season without scoring a goal. I'm sure he was scratched at points here, but he went until his first goal came on December 21st. Of that season, 2003-2004 against Washington. So it wasn't like this guy was putting up, crazy numbers. And like Mike said, he barely even took shots. I mean, half of these games, he didn't even get a shot on goal. But then we get to the turning point, which would be January 8th, 2004, my birthday. I don't know where I was at this time, so don't even ask me. But it was a game against the Oilers at home for the Islanders. And of all people, Justin Papineau scores twice in this game against the Oilers. The Islanders go on to win 3-2. Mike York had one of the goals for the Oilers, which is kind of funny, but he ended up scoring. He put the Islanders ahead in the third period and then put them ahead for good later on in that same period. Both power play goals, one assisted by Pekka and Ninema, and then the other assisted by Adrian O'Coin.
Papineau beat Reasoner. O'Coin to Ninema. Now to Pekka. Chance there, Conklin with a good save, and Papineau just waits on the other side. This shot gets blocked, and look at all that room for Pekka. Can't score, but Papineau is there to find the rebound. He puts it into the empty net, and now the Islanders remain on the power play.
And he started it all with a face-off win, something the Islanders haven't had that much of. Justin Papineau winning the draw, finishes the play, and the Islanders still up 5-on-4 for the next minute 55. So Papineau.
On
Conklin. Around, but not out. Good keep by the skate of O'Coin to Pepino. He scores! Justin Pepino on the power play. His second goal of the game. And the Islanders regain the lead. It's 3-2 New York. And Smith's penalty could be a killer for the Oilers.
Well, the Oilers failed to clear it, and keeping it in with his skate was O'Coin. And look at a quick shot. Offensive players can score from just about anywhere, and that's what Papineau is. He's an offensive player, and he just turns. I mean, the shot wasn't necessarily hard, but it was quick, and it was in a perfect spot. So Papineau with his second tonight, and the power play goal gives the Islanders the 3-2 lead.
This is kind of an insane game to watch. It's on YouTube. I watched it, or you know, you can watch the part of it, and like just this collection of early 2000s players, uniforms, situations. It's Billy Jaffe and Howie Rose. And it's just like, it's like a time machine. Like it just literally brings you back to this time in which you Islanders games were filled with just hope against hope. Like you were just dying to pull something out of these guys, even though you knew going in, you were probably going to lose because they weren't very good. And they weren't gonna, but the Oilers at this time were also kind of like on the fence. You know, they would be in the playoffs, but like they would get there as an eighth seed and then have this sort of like drag it, knockdown, drag out playoff series with Dallas or something like that. Do either of you have any recollection of this momentous two goal game against the Edmonton Oilers? I mean, the other funny thing about these early 2000s Islanders Oilers games is that this is when literally nobody was in the building. I have seen a million of these games, and there was, you know, it'd be me and 2,000 other people watching because nobody cared. Teams from Western Canada and teams from Florida, nobody cared about watching them play at Nestle Coliseum. And so I don't believe I watched this game. I don't certainly don't remember it off the top of my head, but do either of you have any recollection of the Justin Papineau game? Let's just call it what it is. It's the Justin Papineau game.
No.
No.
But I see there's seven future or former Islanders in the Edmonton lineup. One of them, yeah. Marty Reasoner, played 17 minutes in that game.
Wow.
No point. This season and then the next season when they came back from the lockout, like the Islanders and Oilers just traded teams.
Yeah.
It was insane. There were weird Islanders all over the place, whether in goal for the Oilers or, Pekka, York, Ninema. These two teams in such a weird way were kind of joined at the hip. And
I mean, Steos, who else did I see here? Rafi Torres, Eric Brewer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Izbister. It's crazy, man. Because the next version of the Oilers too, like that, when they came back from the lockout, it was almost like the Islanders and Oilers just traded a six for six trade.
Yeah. Sven Butenschon as well, who will come up again in a few minutes, believe it or not. I'm surprised he won't get his own episode. But yeah, this was a wild thing. And I mean, and the funny thing was, like, you can almost hear in Howie's voice, like, whoa, Justin Papineau, like, where did he come from? I forgot he was on the team. But this was sort of, I think, the player that people kind of expect. Like, you know, this was a guy who could score. Because these were good goals. Like, they were nice-looking goals. I don't know where this was for most of the season, but he would score again a night later, or two nights later against the Rangers, which was pretty impressive. But then his next goal came towards the end of the month against the Hurricanes in what would be the Islanders' first matchup against Peter Laviolette in his second spot.
Carolina, this is the first time that the 39-year-old Laviolette will face his former team. One of the NHL's youngest coaches, Laviolette, led the Islanders to the playoffs twice during his stint on Long Island, but that was not enough to keep his job. But on December the 15th, Laviolette back in the NHL as a replacement for Paul Maurice. There's Mr. Laviolette coaching against his former team for the first time. Less than 4 minutes in, Islanders power play, Trent Hunter. Super rookie in front to Justin Papineau. He beats Kevin Weeks, fifth goal of the year, one of the Islanders after one.
He ended the season scoring, you know, a goal every, I don't know, four or five games or so, but like that kind of masks how he went MIA for the first half of the season, in the first quarter of the season. I don't know, it's kind of funny. But yeah, it never really turned out to be what we expected.
Yeah, and you were talking kind of like how the ethos of as a fan these days was kind of just hoping to extract blood from a stone,
right,
with a lot of these players. And I think Papineau's line mate in this game Trent Hunter is the epitome of it.
Mm.
Because Dan, you might have as much natural hockey talent as Trent Hunter. And that guy still ended up like scoring 25 goals in his rookie year and being like a good NHL player. But he was our guy. Like that's how. Right. So like the expectation on Papineau was like, can you just be as good as Trent Hunter?
Yeah.
Can you be a supporting cast member to Trent Hunter? Because hey, we traded Chris Osgood for you.
Right.
That's a big deal. Can you do it? And then he'd show, you know, maybe the parallels are too easy because of the number thing, but it's almost like the questions being asked of Oliver Wahlstrom, which is we're not asking all that much really out of you right now. Right. We're not asking you to be the winger for Matt Barzal. We're just asking right. can you be the guy that we used a 13th overall pick on and to play a secondary role and do it well and provide some upside with Papineau. It was kind of the same thing. Like we traded Chris Osgood for you, and all we're asking for you is to kind of nestle in there between luminaries like Trent Hunter and Oleg Kvasha and the second coming of Marius Tchaikovsky. Above, we don't want you to be, you know, Steve Webb or Eric Cairns guy. Like we just want you to be, you know, a nice firmly middle six kind of forward. And yeah, he couldn't deliver that despite having a name that sounded like he should have been a 30 goal scorer in the NHL.
I wonder
it's so funny to see, like, so ice times during that era are just hilarious. I'm looking at his game log right now. So he played under 4 minutes like 8 times, and he only played for 10 minutes 14 times that whole season. This guy was consistently getting 5 minutes a night, but that was normal. Like right. They would always, like they were playing guys like 25 minutes a night, and there was people. And it, like, could you imagine like what, like out of like for forwards, if they were playing consistently like 22 to 24 minutes a night right now?
Yeah.
Like that could never happen. But no, like fourth line center, you're literally going out there for like 5 shifts.
Yep.
This game on February 18th against Pittsburgh, Islanders won this. Papineau's ice time, 3 minutes and 48 seconds. 3 minutes and 48 seconds in a game. Yep. And I don't think he was hurt.
You can imagine what hockey Twitter would have looked like back then. Like,
right.
This guy's shooting 18% and he's got this great, you know, XGF going. When he's on the ice, the Islanders are only giving up, you know, one out of every 4 scoring chances.
Mm.
Can we please give Justin Papineau a fair shake, Sterling? And then, you know, the next day at morning line, like morning skate, when they do the line rushes, we see Papineau as like the extra forward, and people are calling for Steve Sterling to be sent to like upstate penitentiary or something. Which is, I mean, you know, another thing that wasn't around back then was that we morning line rushes.
Oh my God,
just weren't a thing. Like you just didn't hear. How would on earth, unless you were there at Iceworks in Syosset, how would you know who was starting and who was playing with who?
Who's the first goalie off the ice? We need to know who the first goalie off the ice is. That's the most important thing ever. Please, I need 17 reporters all telling me who the first goalie off the ice is, so I know who's starting 7 hours from now. That's the most important thing. That's my job, is to tell everybody, Ilya Sorokin's the first goalie off the ice. That means he's starting. Oh my God, sound the alarms. Anyway,
he must hate Papineau. He's playing him with Goddard and Weinhandle again. When is he going to get the chance? To play get a chance to play with Trent Hunter?
It is funny that every single time, like, he seems to play less than 4 minutes, the Islanders win. There was a game in December against the Leafs, 3 minutes and 33 seconds, Islanders won. There was a tie against Boston, 3 minutes and 39 seconds. It was a win against Tampa Bay in March, 3 minutes and 58 seconds, just under the wire. So, I don't know. One quick funny thing about Steve Sterling. So, back to that Oilers game real quick before we move on. Sterling had moved Papineau to a line with Michael Pekka and Matthias Weinhandel, and then got the 2 goals in the third period. And they asked him about it, and Sterling said, "I saw it early," meaning he saw that Papineau was getting his legs moving, just like Justin Mapletoft and Derek Bekar, which meant that they got an unusual amount of ice time in the period. So, yeah, none of this makes any sense at all.
I really wish he saw it early more often than he did.
I know.
My man saw it late way more often than he saw it early.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, so there was the Oilers 2-goal game. Like I said, there was a game against the Hurricanes where he scored a goal. But these sort of moments were very few and far between for Justin Papineau. And then when the playoff time rolled around, he was nowhere to be found. The Islanders played the Lightning, like we said, they lost. I don't think he was hurt. But he just didn't play at all in that series. And, you know, the Islanders lost in a fairly quiet 5 games. But they must have seen something that they liked, because they signed him to a new deal in July of 2004. But the problem was that he would get hurt. And actually, the last game that he would play as an Islander would be in April 4th of 2004 against the Flyers. That would be it for him, because he would play in Bridgeport to start the 04-05 season, because there was a lockout happening and AHL was really the biggest game in town. But then he got hurt. He had a severe shoulder injury and he missed about 5 months. He missed from November to about March, and, you know, came back, played a few games and just never made it back. And then that was it. After that, he started the tour. The European tour, we can talk a lot about this. He played in Switzerland for a season, but then he made it over to Germany, where he apparently still lives now, and he ended up playing for Grizzlies Wolfsburg, which is a great name, and Adler Mannheim, the Eagles. And his teammate with Mannheim was, once again, Sven Butenschön, former Islander, former Oiler, certainly a weird Islander, certainly weird facial hair, some of the weirdest Islanders' facial hair we've ever seen. But this has apparently been his thing. He was playing in Germany, Papineau. I think he had a fun time playing there. He made a couple of productive seasons. But I guess, you know, this kind of worked out for him. I don't know if he ever came close to... Oh, sorry. I completely forgot. He signed a contract with the Devils, and he played a season for Lowell in the AHL, before the Lowell Devils, before then signing with Switzerland and then in Germany. So by 2006, he was all but out of the NHL and onto the European track. So, I mean, did you guys, I fully admit I had completely lost track of Justin Papineau after he left the Islanders, but like, this was kind of a crazy thing. This guy went from being this sort of vaunted prospect and player, you know, who every once in a while might show you something, to just being like gone. Like, I know it was, the lockout was a weird time, coming back was a weird time, but like, when the Islanders resumed, Justin Papineau was not invited. he just wasn't here. I mean, did either of you ever think again, like, whatever happened to Justin Papineau? Where'd he go? Like, is he still here? Is he still on the roster? Like, can they use him? But he was gone. He was long gone. Because I don't remember him. He just kind of quietly left, basically.
I kind of remember when he signed with New Jersey, because that was the very infamous summer of 2006 for the Islanders. And I kind of remember being like, well, if he couldn't beat out a team of Jeff Hamilton and Rob Collins and Blake Como, and actually Blake Como ended up being a pretty good player, but like, you know, probably wasn't really much for him left here. I think in general, like, when you actually look at like who was part of that like 2004 to 2006 Bridgeport like team in that era, there's really not a lot there. And so if you weren't able to crack the, you know, the big team in that era, especially after a really disappointing 05-06 season, I have to imagine there really wasn't much there. And it turns out there wasn't.
Yeah. And the lockout had that weird effect too, where it kind of, like, players kind of just disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, like we knew it was coming, but it was also so abrupt, and it became such a black hole of information, because nobody was covering hockey anyways. And then when it wasn't being played, even less people were paying attention to it. It was so hard to find like updates on the labor strike. And I remember there was one kind of brief moment in the middle of the winter where it looked like that they might play a shortened season. And it was impossible just to find any information on it. And then when they struck a deal and everybody kind of rushed back and started to sign free agents or whatever, you think about the team that went into the lockout, the Islanders that went into the lockout, and the ones that came out of it, still Islanders, like Jurkowski was gone, O'Coin was gone, Pekka was gone, Hamrlik was gone. It was Scatcherd was gone. Obviously Cliff Ronning was gone. Buttenjohn was gone. All these guys like were gone. So Papineau was so far down on that list of guys that just left with very little fanfare because we didn't have a chance to say goodbye due to the lockout, that it was so hard to find, once again, find information on him. Like, where did he go? And you could go to Nassau Coliseum for the first game back. I think it was against the Hurricanes. And if I were to ask the person sitting next to me, like, hey, is Justin Papineau back? We'd be like, we have no idea. And we can't just take out a phone to look up if he's back, you know, where he right. is. There's no way to find where Justin Papineau is. And so it's a fun kind of full circle moment that this guy comes to the Islanders with, I wouldn't even call it fanfare, but expectations, and you better give us like a good performance, because God, Chris Osgood, man, like this is a lot to live up to, and just poof, he's gone, you know, in the most kind of quiet way you can imagine, not with a bang, but a lockout, right? Like it's it's impossible to go out any quieter than that in that era of hockey media blackouts. And I'm sure, you know, if we were in Toronto or Edmonton or Vancouver, it would have been a pretty big deal that Papineau moves on from Islanders, right? Would be a headline. But here, just you showed up on opening night and you're like, okay, I remember him. That's Miro Chetan. We got him from that trade and we signed him. There's Lukowicz. There was no mention. Like, no, they weren't gonna say, hey, by the way, if you're looking for Justin Papineau, he's in Mannheim now. Like there was just none of that. It was this weird hockey darkness era. You know, the end of the dead puck era was just so devoid of any information that he kind of floated off into the abyss, and he wasn't the only one. You know, pour a drink out for someone like Eric Manlow too, who that happened to, or Tommy Pettinen. Like there were right. guys that just disappeared, and there was no way to track them down.
I think like that era too, like 05, was such a weird time because a lot of teams turned over like crazy because right. they didn't roll over the contract. They were like, okay, if you were a free agent in 04 or 05, you're a free agent now. And so it was chaos. And so like all these teams were like trying to sell their fan bases on the bill of goods that they brought in. Like, do you remember the campaign that they had for Chetan and for Brent Sopel and Lukowicz? And like there was this whole thing about how Brad Lukowicz was drafted by the Islanders. Yeah. Now he's home. And like we spent like days talking about this amazing homecoming when this guy probably set foot on the right. one time before 2005 as like a member of the Islanders. And that was like, that was kind of what the whole league was going through at that time. There was so much turnover that, yeah, like a lot of those guys, like these quad A guys, just got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. I mean, now if this had happened, you'd have 17 people saying like, I can't believe they didn't qualify Justin Papineau. How can you do this? But, you know, and then like saying my team's going to pick him up and he's going to be, yeah, okay. This is, you know, Josh Hosang effect all over again. But it was a weird time. And it's just funny to me because he did come. I think fanfare is probably fair to say for Justin Papineau, because he did come in. You know, again, it was a high profile trade, and they made it sound like this guy was coming in to be kind of a, you know, not a super prospect or anything, but like a guy who was going to contribute and was going to be, you know, again, you'd have Pekka at the top and Yashin, and, you know, there was no reason to think that Papineau or Como or any of these other guys wouldn't be, you know, the kind of the next in line behind those guys. And it did not work out at all. And just one day you just woke up and the dude was just gone. Because again, even during the lockout, I'm saying that, you know, the AHL was the top league at the time, but it's not like you were reading AHL stories and statistics in the newspaper. Like, it just wasn't, you know, there wasn't an easy place to find it. The AHL's website has been and continues to remain one of the worst websites I have ever used in my entire life. Whoever is in charge of their web presence should have been fired decades ago. I don't know what, I know you guys are a minor league, but could we spend a little money on some web development, please? Like, it's awful. It's just the fact that the website is called the AHL, because that was the only thing that they could get theahl.com as opposed to just AmericanHockeyLeague.com. I don't know. It's really strange. But in any event. But yeah, so that ends the short, sad story of Justin Papineau, the prospect that wasn't, basically. Ends his Islanders career, 69 games played, 9 goals, 7 assists, 16 points over the course of 2 seasons. You know, 64 of those 69 games came in 1 season. And yeah, his Bridgeport numbers were pretty good. 76 games played, 53 points, 31 goals. He had a lot of time to play down there. But as far as the Islanders go, this was just a blip. This was a drop in the bucket. And I don't know, we kind of expected a little bit more, but he's apparently still in Germany. He pops up every once in a while on something talking about his experience playing over there. So good on him. And again, we ask this question all the time. I wonder if he knows that, like, there are 3 guys and probably more listening to this being like, man, I remember Justin Papineau playing for the Islanders. Like, right? Like, his legacy as an Islanders prospect is, I don't even think he thinks about it, but we're here. You guys were younger than me. I remember this too. Like, it's there. It is a legacy. It's not a glorious one or anything, but we still remember.
I remember. Yeah, they had, so during the lockout, they had, Bridgeport played a couple of games at the Coliseum, and yes. I went to one of the games, and I don't remember what happened or who did what, but after the game, they brought a lot of the players out and they did like a signing. And I honestly don't know how they made those logistics work, but fine, fair enough. And I distinctly remember going up to Papineau, and he was pretty, he had like a pretty big line. And I went to him and I was like, dude, you are the future of this team. And I'm pretty sure that jinxed him.
Oh,
he was not the future of this team, but he was, he did become the symbol of the most average quad A player to ever play for the Islanders. And so he does have a legacy in that regard. And if he is listening to this, I hope he knows that and that we cherish him for it very much.
Yeah, man. Go. That'd be like what? going up to Carson Kuhlman or the now departed Tanner Fritz a couple years ago and be like, Tanner, you're the future of this team, man. Like, come on. It's so good. That's the kind of hope that we put on this guy.
Right.
Was sold to us as a finished the finished product of he's done with being a prospect. He's now going to be an NHLer. And oh my God, I wonder what he was like going home that day being like, man, did my mom send that kid over or something? Like,
yeah, did he say anything to you? Like, wow, thanks, kid.
I know, kid.
I think I sent you both a picture of like a t-shirt with a bunch of Bridgeport autographs, and he was on that t-shirt. I don't remember what he said back to me. He probably just like did one of those like hockey player like smile and not like sure, kid, whatever. But I remember it very much because I remember how much it kind of crashed and burned entirely. And like, yeah, I mean, that's like a seminal moment of that 04 like period, because there was such little hockey. And I think it's also like, I think in general, like that is the most symbolic like anecdote of like the like how little information actually existed. Like we joke a lot about like the prospecting and all, how it's like kind of like hilarious how there's just so much confidence in what isn't really known. But in general, like there's consensus around like some of these guys. We would have had no idea in 2004 what the consensus of Justin Papineau would have been. We would have had no idea. Like we look at some of these guys, even like a guy that just got traded like Arno Durando, and we're like, yeah, okay, like he's probably not all that much, whatever. But like in 2004, we probably been like, yeah, this guy's legit.
Yep.
And I think like that's a lot of the lack of knowledge and information that was out there back then. And I think it's like kind of a good reminder of how far we've come and how much access actually does exist for us these days. Because if not for that, like to your point, Mike, maybe you'd be going up to Tanner Fritz and telling him how great he was. And he didn't very much.
Yeah. You're like, I'm on my way to Minsk, actually.
You're like,
oh yeah, that's what I bet. You're the future of Dynamo Minsk,
right? Or the future of Mannheim Eagles, as in the case of Papineau. But that's an amazing story, and I mean, you only you have that story, right? Like there's, yeah, sure. Everybody's going to meet, you know, superstars somewhere. Somebody's probably meeting Bo Horvat right now, talking to him. And so he's like, yeah, whatever. But you, only you, Carrie, have that Justin Papineau future of the team story. And that is your legacy. And this is Justin Papineau's legacy. So this has been a great time. Thank you so much again for coming on. It's been far too long to have you on again, but you were the perfect first guest for the show. And you're obviously the perfect man to talk about Justin Papineau with. So I hope you had a lot of fun tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It has been a real joy to talk about this guy. And hope to talk to you all again soon.
definitely. I know you have another player on the dibs list somewhere. So we'll definitely get to that player soon. But this has been, you know, now people are going to be happy about this because we got to Justin Papineau. So you've made everybody's dreams come true, as you did Justin Papineau, I'm sure, when you told him he was the future of the team.
I hope he's having a great day.
I hope he is too. I'm sure he is. Where can everybody find you on Twitter? Just so we get out. If they're not following you already.
I mean, pretty much nowhere these days. But if you were to access my dormant account, you could still find it at Habermetrics.
You should definitely follow Carrie there as a symbolic gesture. Anyway, because I think we're all kind of migrating away from Twitter a little closer. But if you're not, do that. So, but thank you very much, Carrie. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on the great Justin Papineau, the prospect that wasn't, the big trade of Chris Osgood, and I don't know, future of the team that never was. We've had a lot of them. Yep. A lot of guys to choose from.
You know, and it's funny that a lot of times these weird Islanders we go on, they end up representing something bigger than themselves. And I didn't think that I'd go into this episode realizing that Justin Papineau would be the figurehead or the manifestation of the lack of information, media information, back during this time of the NHL. And as Carrie said, how far we've come since. And had this trade happened, say, 6 weeks ago, we would have all been like, it sounds like the AJ Greer trade. But back then, it was the trade that sent Chris Osgood packing. And unfairly, Justin Papineau was not able to live up to the expectations of being traded for the Islander version of Chris Osgood, who himself obviously represented a much bigger idea than just the guy wearing the cat eye mask. So Justin, you never got a fair shake, buddy, but we still very much appreciate your tenure with the Islanders, and none of us more so than that dashing teenager that told you were the future of the Islanders back in 2004 or 2005.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do appreciate it, and we do hope that he's doing well, and he thinks fondly upon his time with the Islanders as well. We thank you all very much for listening. This has been a lot of fun. And if you've been asking for Justin Papineau, there you go. We hope we have made your day in waiting for this episode. Sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. And a reminder that our first ever live event will be Saturday, March 30th at 4 p.m. at the beautiful brand new Offside Tavern in New York City. Around 4:45 or so, we'll start to record a live podcast that will be all about your Weird Islanders story. So bring your Weird Islanders jerseys, t-shirts, swag, whatever you got, because we want to hear about it. That is Saturday, March 30th at Offside Tavern. Be there. It's going to be a great time. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. Our theme song is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Find more of Bjorn's music at Bandcamp and Spotify as well. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day, obviously. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Learn more at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. And we'll be back again in a few weeks with another Weird Islander. Until then, keep the Islanders weird. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.